And now here's food for thought.
All right. Welcome back to the second hour of Food for Thought with Carol. And joining me is Jeannie Lester. We are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region, as well as streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Grand Estate Dairy Promotion. And anytime during the show, we'd love for you to give us a call, 866-823-1077. And just to remind you also, we are live at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester, 814 Elm Street. You can come on down and have lunch with Carol and Jeannie. Come and have lunch over at Midtown Cafe and come and watch the show.
I'm amazed that we are kind of not spinning. You know, you said all around the world, and I'm thinking I'm going all around the world on this chocolate that we're enjoying since our last guest. But I am also very excited about our next guest.
Yes. So very exciting. We are going to be joined with Linda Thompson Ditch from Kansas, and she does a food blog, which listeners, if you want to look her up in the meantime, lindaathompson.blogspot.com. And welcome, Linda, to Food for Thought. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be back on the radio in New Hampshire again.
I know. We've missed you so much. Tell me what's been happening with you.
Oh, well, you mean from when I went from being Linda Odom to Linda Thompson Odom to Linda Thompson Ditch, and now most people just know me as Linda Ditch. back when I was writing for the Hippo and for the Concord Monitor newspaper, my name was a little different than it is now. So,
but that's okay. Did you know what? Jeff recognized you, though. I told Jeff, you know, Jeff Bart from Granite State Candy, and he said to make sure to say hi to you. So
I was listening to that on online, which you sound very great streaming across the world.
Oh,
and it was nice to hear Jeff again. I enjoyed talking to him. Of course, when I lived there, I think I pretty much lived at Granite State Candies.
he just shared that with us.
I even bought my candy canes from him. I mean, you know, I bought any kind of candy I needed. That's where I headed, over to see Jeff.
Aw, that's good. Now, do you know now he has a location right in Manchester?
Get out. Wow.
Yes.
He's expanding.
Yes, right in Manchester, right on Elm Street. Linda, it's just three doors down from my office.
Oh, boy. And you're trying to help you. Well, that's for your 20% taking a walk down, right?
That's exactly right. I just had my 20% truffle for the day.
But if you're walking to the candy store, isn't that burning the calories you're going to eat?
It's only two doors.
I know, but it's only two or three doors down, Linda. I don't think I'm burning much.
Okay, so you have to do laps, but still.
Yeah, this is true. But let's hear all about your food blog, which you do such a great job with that. And maybe let's let listeners, you know, maybe give a little, you know, history on you and, you know, how you got into doing a food blog and, you know, what your history is.
Well, I started writing the food blog in 2010, just before I moved from New Hampshire to Kansas. A lot of people that would read my food pieces back there, you know, wanted to follow along and see what I discovered out this way. So I started writing the blog then, and it has just kind of evolved from there. And now I get anywhere from 10 to 20,000 views a month, and get shared all over the place, the posts that I do. And I like to write. It's so personal to write a blog because you can talk about anything you want. So I write about the recipes that I like and that mean something to me and that maybe have a history in my family or even, you know, with a story behind it that ties in with my late husband who passed away just 8 months ago. And you know, it's a great way to make that personal connection with people that when you're writing in a newspaper or in a magazine, you don't necessarily get to do because you have to be a journalist and you have to stay objective and try and reach the broadest amount of people. Where here, I can be, you know, people just, this is me. You know, if you read my blog, you know who I am.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what I was telling listeners, you know, that you tie in your stories of your family and, you know, with the recipe that you know, you're posting. And I love it. You do such a great job. And your pictures are very, do you take your own pictures?
I do take my own pictures, and I'm practicing and I just got a fancier camera a few months ago, and so I'm trying to even get better and better. But I do take my own pictures, which if you look at some of the early blog posts and then ones now, you can see the difference. I've improved some.
Well, you're doing a great job. Now, what goes into you doing your food blog? Do you blog every day? Do you is it weekly? Is it how do you do it?
I try and blog once a week, but I'd like to get. I mean, there were times I was doing three times a week, but my other writing work has been keeping me busy enough to where I do at least try and post once a week, but twice a week ideally if I can. But lately it's been once a week. And like I said, I pretty much just whatever strikes my fancy. I just put up a new one today about a pasticcio recipe that actually I got from some of the folks there at Greek Fest in Manchester a couple of years ago.
Oh.
And I messed around with it and tweaked it a little bit. But I've been wanting to make it for years and years, and I had dinner guests over on Sunday and thought, well, let's see. I tend to make my dinner guests my guinea pigs to try out the recipe for me.
Of course.
And so, and they all loved it. So I thought, okay, and I'm like, can I put it on my blog? And they're like, yes, put it on your blog. So it's on the blog today. So.
Oh, great. What is that recipe?
It's pasticcio is like, It's kind of called a Greek lasagna. Right. And it's, but it's different in the fact that it's made from, with like penne pasta or ziti pasta. And it's a layer of pasta with peas and then a layer of a meat sauce that doesn't have as much tomato to it as you would like a lasagna. But the thing that really makes it different is the top is covered with a bechamel, which is a cream sauce with lots of cheese, and you bake it that way. And the meat sauce has a little bit of cinnamon in it, gives it a little bit of that, you know, Mediterranean, Middle Eastern kind of flavor.
Right. I did see the your blog from, I think, probably a couple of days ago with the woohoo cocktail.
The woo, yes, for the Super Bowl. Yes, Pat, all right.
That's right. Wasn't that a great game?
Remember that I was such a big fan, that I'm a big football fan. So
She'd come in her Pat's outfits all the time.
Oh, well, yes, you can imagine the rejoicing that we've been having here ever since Sunday.
Oh, you should have seen me running around in my apartment. I couldn't watch when they were doing that final play, where they got the interception. I had to walk into the other room, and I was just listening. And then when I heard interception, I go running into the living room going, that's it, game over.
That's exciting. Well, and you've described that you are, you know, you moved from New Hampshire to Kansas. As you did that, were there particular dishes that really struck you as, okay, this is really indicative of Kansas cooking? You know, how each state or each region, I guess, across the country seems to have its own kind of flair for things or things that stand out as particular dishes. Is there anything that you really noticed that's very different about Kansas as opposed to New Hampshire, food-wise?
Well, to me, Kansas is more country cooking. You know, chicken fried steak and fried chicken and pot roasts and meatloafs and, you know, some of those family dishes that, you know, that the whole family enjoys. I think the thing I noticed the most was somewhat the difference in taste as far as, you know, the Italian dishes I used to make that everybody liked when I lived in New Hampshire and also I lived in Massachusetts for a while, and the Italian dishes I learned to make there. Here, the seasoning was too strong. I had to cut back a little bit on the Italian seasoning. They didn't care for it as much. I use mayo, and here they tend to use Miracle Whip. They call soda pop here. There's those kind of differences and things. But, yeah, to me, I mean, there's Indian food. See, my big question when I first moved out here was, like, well, how popular are things like Indian food and, you know, all the different ethnic foods that are pretty easy to find on the East Coast. And, but they are here and, you know, people do enjoy them. But overall, especially with my husband, my late husband was a very picky eater. In fact, on the blog, he's known as the picky eater.
Aww.
And so he was very, you know, he just, the first few times I cooked for him, he was just like, well, it's okay, trying to be nice, you know.
Are you kidding?
I did. I had to adjust. He thought my baked ziti had too much Italian seasoning in it, and he liked it better with hamburger instead of Italian sausage, you know. Just some adjustments to make, just because, you know, just different tastes. I see the food here a little more simple, but like I said, also a little more homey, a little more family-friendly oriented kind of food. So, that's nice because to me, food is all about bringing people together and, you know, nourishing ourselves. I mean, it's so easy to go pick up a frozen dinner, to, you know, go through the drive-through, that you miss out on just some of the basic element of human living if you're not in the kitchen with your hands in the food and seeing what's going into each dish and teaching your children that, you know, chocolate chip cookies don't come from a package. They come from mixing flour and brown sugar and baking soda. And, you know, it's just a basic element of cooking that I think is so important that I'm afraid that we're losing, and I want to encourage people to sit down at the table together, to get together in the kitchen together and cook and enjoy those times together because you're creating memories that will pass on from generation to generation to generation.
You're listening to Food for Thought here on 107.7 The Pulse. We're talking with Linda Ditch, the food blogger extraordinaire. And, you know, Linda, you just brought up a great point in that, you know, I can make my way around a kitchen, but there are so many times that I feel so busy that I forget to incorporate my kids.
I know.
And just the other day, I have three boys that are still at home, and two of them were not getting along. And so all of a sudden, I came up with this creative solution to have them work on a project together. And the project I came up with is, you two need to make this recipe together, which meant they had to not only remember how to learn, you know, read the direction, get the ingredients, but they had to work together on that. And it startles me because my husband is a very good cook, but I have not spent time making sure that the boys are in the kitchen and learning to cook right along with us.
I love it. What a great idea. That is an excellent idea. I mean, and that's the thing. I don't think, remember, our mom taught us, or sometimes our dad taught us how to cook, and their parents taught them how to cook, usually their moms. I interview so many chefs, and I say, you know, what got you interested in food? And it was cooking with my grandmother. Is 9 times out of 10, that's the answer I get. Cooking with my grandmother is how they first got interested in being a chef. And I'm afraid that it's something that we just aren't passing along to this next generation. And when you hear all the stories about, you know, the health issues tied into the foods we eat and, you know, obesity. And then, you know, in a lot of people, you know, you're drinking diet pop, well, you know, diet soda. But, you know, that's chemicals versus sugar. So which is better for you? Well, maybe iced tea, you know, instead, and those kind of things. I think when people know what's going into the food that they're eating, they make better choices about what they eat. And that includes kids. And the best way to know about what's going into what you're eating is to make it yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
It is. It is. And I'm guilty of that because, you know, when I cook, I'm called like a neat cook. So when I cook, I'm cleaning up after myself, and that's why I'm not a baker. Because when I hear baking, yeah, I see flour all over the place, and it just freaks me out. So
right, yeah, because flour does tend to go everywhere.
Yes, and like even now, you know, if I have my grandkids over, I don't know, the thought of having them help me cook,
yes,
scares me to death.
Yes,
terrible.
No,
that is terrible.
You can kind of make it a conjunction, because I used to teach preschool. When I taught preschool, we used to do cooking lessons. And you can kind of make it at a controlled setting in the fact that if necessary, you measure it out and let them pour it in. Or even as simple as letting them smell the cinnamon so they know what cinnamon smells like.
You know, you are so right.
That's a great point.
That is that really a fantastic is. Point right there.
Because I'm sort of like Carol in that I need to concentrate. I get irritable.
Me
if
too.
There are people trying to talk to me in the kitchen, it's not pretty. I need to focus on that recipe, and I need to read it over and over again to make sure I'm doing it right. I don't want to be slowed down. I don't want to be talked to, which is not a conducive environment to helping your kids to learn.
Right.
But when you make that conscious effort and say, okay, I'm going to allow plenty of time. And then as you suggested, Linda, having even just incorporating little steps along the way, because you're right, just smelling what cinnamon is like.
Exactly.
Would my boys know what's, I mean, they do because they know cinnamon toast, but I mean, that's a great example.
It is. It totally is. And that is definitely something that I should be doing. And, you know, I will make a mental note of that the next time I have Dominic, Rory, or Alexandra over. I'm going to be thinking of you, Linda, when I do that.
Well, make pumpkin pancakes with them because they'll love it. Ooh. And what's fun is you pass around the cinnamon, you pass around the nutmeg, and chances are with cinnamon, they're usually like, oh, that smells good. With nutmeg, oh, what is that? And with pumpkin, oh, that doesn't smell so good. But then when you mix it all together, they're like, wow, that smells good. And it's cooking on the stove. Oh, that smells good. And they realize that all those ingredients came together to make this amazing breakfast.
Right. And then the maple syrup on top of that. Tell me, Linda, that you still use real maple syrup?
Oh, please, heavens, yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's no way. When I go into a restaurant and they, you know, I almost can't order pancakes or anything that needs syrup because, truthfully, there are not a lot of places in Kansas that serve the real stuff. I have to take my own with me if I'm going to have something like that. And I keep telling people, you got to use the stuff that came out of the tree.
Right.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I think we need to go on a short break right now.
And
do you want to hang on just a little bit? Because I'd like to hear about your cruise. And I think the listeners will find that kind of enjoyable to hear what you're going to be doing on your cruise next week. So we're going to go on a short break. We're in studio with Linda Thompson-Ditch. You can check out her blogspot, lindaathompson.blogspot.com. She's a food blogger. Check it out. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Jeannie Lester. We are in studio live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street. You can come on down and watch the show anytime Monday through Friday from noon to 2. And you can give us a call at any time during the show as well, 866-823-1077. And we are with Linda Thompson-Ditch from out in Kansas, What's Cooking in Kansas. And Linda, I just wanted to end your segment with what you are doing next week. You are going on a cruise, and you're actually officially working on your cruise. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes, I'm going to be on the Carnival cruise ship Magic, leaving out of Galveston, Texas, and we're going to the Eastern Caribbean, which is Mexico, Cozumel and Costa Maya. But I'm writing a piece for the local paper here, which I'll be posting on Facebook and Twitter about the link to that. But I also will be then blogging about many of the recipes that I'm going to talk to the chefs on board and talk to some bartenders on board and do some interviews with them and get some recipes from them that I can share on my blog. And we'll learn a little bit about cruise cuisine is what I like to call it.
That is so cool.
I'm also going to be doing a tequila tour of a tequila factory, a distillery, and I'm also going to do a salsa and salsa excursion where we're going to a restaurant and learning how to make these salsas and guacamoles, and then we're going to learn to salsa dance.
Oh, my goodness. What fun is that going to be, Linda?
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to exploring all of it. I'm going with my in-laws. There's 12 of us going, and we're celebrating. My sister-in-law and her husband adopted 4 children from the Ukraine last year, which they made national news because they got stuck in Kiev when the uprising all happened, and they couldn't get back. It took a month before they could get back to the United States with the kids. So we're celebrating the one-year anniversary of their adopting the kids while we're on the cruise. And so it should be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a blast. Oh, my goodness. And all those. So have you ever been into a kitchen on a cruise ship?
No, this is my first cruise ever. So I'm totally a novice at all of it.
One of the cruises, I've been on a couple of cruises, and one of them, they had a, you could do a tour of the kitchen and meet the chef. And I, of course, I did that. Wait, Linda, you are going to be in heaven. It is so fun. It's oh my gosh, you're going to have a blast. It's going to be really
fun.
Well,
I'm hoping they have this thing called a chef's table where they only have like 12 or 14 people, and they set up a table in like the library on the ship, and you go for cocktails and appetizers, and you get a tour of the galley with the ship and with the chef, and then the chef makes a special meal for you. And I'm hoping to get on there and get signed up before it gets full so I can do that, because I really want to. Because that would be, I bet somewhere along the way, I'm sure somebody will show me the galley.
Definitely. Oh my gosh, you're going to have a blast. Well, Linda, thank you so much for calling in, and you will be checking back with us, not next week because you'll be on your cruise, but the week after we'll be talking
right.
to you, and I cannot wait to hear about your wonderful cruise and all the cuisine adventure that you're going to be discovering. How exciting. Yum.
Well, and if you want to follow me on the cruise, I'll be tweeting. It's Linda at Linda Ditt on Twitter, and you can follow. I'm going to make some tweets from the ship, so you can see what's going on.
So at Linda A. Ditch,
yes.
That's your tweet. Okay, good.
That's
all
my
right.
Twitter.
Excellent. Oh my gosh, I'm going to put that in my tweet. So, okay, that sounds great. All right, Linda. Well, thank you, and have a great trip, and we'll be talking to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks. Bye, New Hampshire.
Bye, Kansas. All right, we're going to go on a short break, and you are listening to Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Jeannie Lester. We're in studio at 814 Elm Street, downtown Manchester, the Beacon Building, and when we come back, we are going to be in studio with Julie from Make-A-Wish. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back, Food for Thought, on this beautiful day today. Isn't it just gorgeous out there today?
It is, because you've got the bright whiteness of the snow, and then the sunshine is beating in. And yeah,
it was just so different getting in the car today than it was, of course, yesterday.
Oh, yes.
You know, I was going down Wardley Road, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's nice and bright. The sun is shining, and, you know, I mean, it is winter, so.
Yes. In New England.
Unfortunately. Well, you know, it's winter. It is
yes.
what it is, you
yes.
know. So, but we are in studio with Julie Barron from Make-A-Wish. She is the president and CEO of Make-A-Wish. So welcome to Food for Thought. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Well, we are just so excited. We've been anxious for this segment ever since we first kind of sat down and chatted with you, because there are a lot of folks that know of Make-A-Wish and have maybe a general idea of what that does and what it's for. But the more that we talk, the more that we kind of uncover, and there's so much there for the families, for the folks who work there. So I thought maybe what we should do is have you give just a little bit of an overview. What is Make-A-Wish? What is the purpose? And then we can chat a little bit more about what people don't know.
That's great. So we grant wishes for children with life-threatening medical conditions, and we hope that wish gives them, you know, hope for the future, the strength to fight a really tough battle, and sheer joy. Mm-hmm. You know, and what we're really trying to do is get to that child's heartfelt wish, whatever that experience, event, or thing is that can be deeply felt by the child. And I don't know if you can think of the last time you saw a smile on a child's face when they started really being engaged with you and telling you about something they were really excited about. I mean, that's what we're looking for. We want to bring them that heartfelt wish, whatever it is. You know, and a wish can be as simple as wanting a puppy, or, you know, as elaborate as wanting to pet a cheetah in the wild.
Oh, my goodness.
And everything in between. It's really sure. all about that individual child's imagination.
Now, you said something when you first started that description, and that this is for children with a life-threatening illness. And I think there's an important distinction to be made there. It's not necessarily a terminal illness, or you don't want folks to term it that way or think of it that way. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's important and what the distinction is?
Yeah, it's so important because what we're really trying to do is give that child something to look forward to. And one of the hard things about our mission is that many, many years ago, we did only grant wishes for children with that T word. I can't even say it, but you know, as we grew as an organization, we realized, oh my gosh, we're not getting those referrals in because a parent has to give up on their child in order to refer them, you know, and that's, you know, what we're really trying to do is give them that hope, that strength, and that joy to make it through to the other end. And we lose so many kids, but so many more we don't.
Mm-hmm. And it also sounds like from you must have the person that is the grantor. Is that like what are the terms, like someone that is going to help with the wish?
We have volunteer wish grantors. So when a child is referred to us and we know they have a life-threatening medical condition, then we identify two volunteer wish grantors, and they go out and they sit with the child and they really try to find out what that child's heartfelt wish is, you know, asking them all kinds of questions, you know, about, you know, what they see when they close their eyes, you know, if they could have anything, if they could go anywhere, if they could be anything, if they could do anything, what would they choose? And that's really how we work with each child to really find out what that heartfelt wish is.
And it must take time. It sounds like it's probably not just a one visit.
Our wish granters, you know, do build wonderful relationships with our families. And, you know, it's fun for us because sometimes the wish granters will go out and they'll meet with a family and the child knows right away, like they've barely got their, their shoes off or their coat off going into the door. And the child is, you know, I want to do this, you know, I want to be a princess, or, you know, I want to be a zookeeper. I want to be a construction worker. I want to go to Greece. I want to do, you know, whatever it is. And then there are, you know, other kids that really want to think about it. Mm-hmm. They want to investigate things, and they want to, you know, sometimes they change their mind a couple of times, you know, so it's really working with each individual child to try to find out what that is. But so once the wish granters find out what that child's wish is, then they bring that information back to the office and work with the office team and then volunteers around the state to put whatever pieces, you know, that there are to that wish together, you know, because our goal is to really exceed that child's expectations and really find out what their, you know, one true heartfelt wish is that I mentioned, you know. So, you know, we aim to really hit it out of the box for every child and make it that one true special experience for them, whatever it is.
Wow. That must be just amazing when you get that twinkle in their eye, when you know, you know, that is really, you know, what they want, when you're trying to pull it from them, you know. That must be just an amazing experience. Imagine being a wish granter.
I can. Yeah. And just getting to, as you said, elicit that response from a child and knowing what it means to that child. And then I'm thinking, too, what are the reactions of the parents and the rest of the family that's sitting there while this is going on? And just thinking of how that impacts the whole family.
Yeah, and we really do try to include, you know, it's the child's wish, but we really try to include the entire family. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, when our wish granters go out and meet with the family, you know, if there were any siblings in the family, you know, they bring little icebreakers and little gifts for everyone.